Hello, and welcome to episode 7 of Mishmash Mayhem.
Mishmash Mayhem.
The podcast where we take the schoolyard conversation of, hey, which one of those fictional characters would win in a fight? And we talk about it in a podcast.
That's what this is.
It is, for the 7th time, what this is. So, I'm Chris.
And I'm Wade.
You know what's really exciting? This is the first time since episode 1 we've got 2 new people.
Yeah, I mean, after that famous double knockout. It's famous here. Anyway, you know.
It hopefully will be famous amongst the 10 people that listen to us next week. No, 2 weeks.
Fan art framed on my wall.
Yeah?
No, I don't really. But, you know, I could draw some fan art.
I don't know if it counts as fan art when you do it. It's just art, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if I was a fan of the parts that you talk about, it's fine.
Well, I'd like to hope you are.
Yeah.
I don't know. That might be a grey area. Maybe if you somehow did it of only the bits I talk about without mention, like including anything that you've mentioned.
That'd be quite difficult, but I'm sure I could achieve it.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to introduce both the characters. I don't know which order we're going to do it in, but we'll work it out. And we're going to go through what their skills are, what their weapons that they'll have in battle, their defenses and all that majigamimu, their preferred styles of combat and etc. And then we're going to roll the die of death.
The die of death
to determine where these two combatants will face each other. At this point, we will then have a little bit more discussion about what that's entailed in the location, because we were quite vague of our locations and it's more fun to make it up on the fly. Then we're going to have a little discussion about who we think would win in a mishmash mayhem fight.
That's something we'll do. You said on the last episode as well that our locations are very vague, and I'd like to point out that a couple of them are really specific.
Yes, that's true. Some of our locations are incredibly specific. What I meant was the details aren't firmed up.
Because, I mean, even like last episode, we had above the Fires of Mount Doom. That's quite a specific location.
It is a specific location, yeah. That's a good example of one that is, I'm talking nonsense about. Right, who's going to go first?
I was going to say, do you want to go first? Because in episode 1, I went first. No, I didn't. Did I?
No, you didn't. Know.
In episode 1, you went first when we had 2 new characters. But I was going to say anyway, did you want to go first? Because in the last few episodes, I've gone first, as Drax has been around for a while.
That's fair. Okay. Last time, people who remember or have only just listened or wrote it down will remember that my clue was the once and future king. I might have also given another clue, but I can't remember what it was.
Once and future king.
Yeah, was that all I put? That's what I said to our guests as well.
Oh, no idea. I can't remember.
Sweet.
That sounds like Aragorn, doesn't it?
It does sound like Aragorn, but I can confirm it is not Aragorn.
Okay.
If I was to pick someone out of Lord of the Rings, it wouldn't be Aragorn. I don't know who it would be, though.
It would be quite interesting if we'd had a Lord of the Rings character falling on from Mount Doom.
Yeah. You know, that was my hope. Anyway, they hail from a mythical anime land. They've been dead and brought back to life as part of the Holy Grail War. It's King Arthur, the female, Saber from Fates They Know.
I don't know this anime.
It's a pretty good anime.
Yeah?
Yeah. So in Fates They Know, there is a war for the Holy Grail, and whoever wins the Holy Grail gets their one wish granted. Kind of like the Triforce, but slightly different. In the war, a bunch of arbitrarily selected people for some reason. They might have actually not been arbitrarily selected, but for all intents and purposes, they are. Become masters, and through their life force being, or mana, as they call it, they summon, whether intentionally or not, servants. And these servants are historical figures who have, you know, since died, but become part of the Holy Grail War. And some little scrub, because it's an anime show, so of course it's a scrub who gets a badass woman, gets Saber, King Arthur. I believe their name is I can't remember what name they go by.
I believe their name is. Okay, Google. What's their name?
Let me Google that for myself. Oh, here we go. Altria Pendragon. Which obviously is the female version of Arthur Pendragon, King Arthur.
That's cool.
She is Saber, essentially all the people who are summoned come under a different class, and there's one of each class in the war. She comes under Saber, which is the sword fighters. Essentially the broad class is sword fighters. There's other ones, some of them are kind of have some similar things, but broad class is sword fighters. So essentially, she gets magical energy from her master, and she's an excellent and bloody amazing swordsman / swordwoman with a huge wealth of experience from being King Arthur and running around with the Knights of the Round Table, gallivanting, doing whatever they did, not going to Camelot because it's a silly place. That's a Monty Python joke and all that jazz.
If she gets her magical energy from her master, does her power relate to his? Like, if the master is not strong, will she also be weak?
In a sense, yes, but she is naturally very strong. So, don't get wrong, a strong master definitely enhances her power, but in the one I've watched, I think I watched two of the series today, but she is a pretty pathetic master to start with, and she's still badass.
Okay.
To pretty good degrees. But if her master is slain, she will eventually decay out of the world unless she can find another source of mana. But it's not like instant. It's not instantly gone. You know, there'd be time for her to go, oh, bugger me, I better do something about this. Or just go, oh, I guess I'm returning to the Neverworld, or whatever it's called. It's probably not called the Neverworld. So, as a king, as a swordswoman king, as a swordsman woman king.
Is she not referred to as a queen?
No, she is the king.
Okay.
Absolutely, she is the king. She is not the queen. She is equipped with a sword. For the most part, her sword is invisible to conceal its identity, because in Fates Day and Night, it's very important that people don't know who you are historically, because if they know who you are, they'll know a lot more about you and therefore your weaknesses and all that jibber-jabber. Although, honestly, in this context, probably not that important. But, you know, she does typically keep her sword invisible, which is cool because it means that people can't necessarily judge, you know, how long the strike's going to be, things like that.
Yeah.
The sword is... I was hoping you'd probably name what the sword was. Do you know what the sword is?
Excalibur.
It's Excalibur. It used to be a different sword, but then she lost it and she got Excalibur instead. Excalibur's a pretty badass sword. Do you want to hear the description of it?
Hells yeah.
Right, this is fantastic. Excalibur is a divine construct, the pinnacle of holy swords, and the strongest holy sword, whose equal is the strongest demonic sword, Gram. So there's an equal. One of the ultimate God-forged weapons, a last phantasm forged by the planet as the crystallization of the wishes of mankind stored and tempered within the planet.
I mean, that sounds like some Dark Souls shit right there.
It does sound like some Dark Souls shit right there, but it's not. So she has this sword. She can channel power through it, mostly at its tip, to cleave people in two or shoot massive beams of energy across the sky while no one's looking to blow up people on unicorns. That happened. But that's not all. She's covered in full-blown armor, as you would be if you were a knight. But despite this, she can still, you know, run pretty fast. She can run across water because she got blessed by the Lady of the Lake.
That's cool.
Yeah. She can't per se run up walls, but you know in the Star Wars people jump and they can jump up vertical surfaces or run up them. She could do that. So if she was to stand still, she would fall off a building, the side of a building. But she can run up them. Defy gravity in inverted commas, but it's not defying gravity. It's just
She can't fly, she can just with enough momentum, can run up a vertical surface.
Yeah, exactly. She can heal her own wounds, but at the expense of her own energy, so that would either require replenishing from her master or just put her into a weakened state for a time. She has excellent magic resistance. Because she is Altria Pendragon and is imbued with dragon-like properties. She is weak to anti-dragon things. And I think that is specifically anti-dragon. It's anti-saber. It's anti-Pendragon. Anti-King Arthur. Because as we all know, King Arthur's a dragon.
Wow. I mean, I didn't know that.
No, he's not a dragon. She technically is physically frail, but she defends herself with mana infused into her body and armor, which allows her to take on some very strong opponents. I mean, she's taken swords to the face frequently and other parts of the body, mostly other parts of the body. Has exceptional instincts, allowing her to dodge incoming projectiles, including gunfire. And as we all know, gunfire is pretty fast. Do you know how fast a bullet is?
No. Isn't it like 90 miles an hour or something?
90 miles an hour? Are you saying you could outspeed a bullet by driving down the motorway?
Yes. Well, I mean, no. I mean, obviously, no, now that you said it. 200 miles an hour.
That's 1,500.
1,500 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I don't know. I don't often time bullets.
Do you not?
And go.
Kind of around 350, 400 meters a second. It's quite fast.
Yeah. I mean, it's faster than I can go.
It's faster than I can go as well. But only slightly. She's absolutely full of chivalry, and indeed her combat skills are enhanced if she's fighting honourably one-on-one, but not dishonourably one-on-one. Chivalry, I believe, is actually one of her innate abilities. Doesn't make much sense, but it does. And equally, as again, this doesn't probably won't make much of a difference here, but if she was fighting in Fates Day Night and someone else told her their name, then she would be honour-bound to reveal her name as well. Because she's a goddamn honourable knight, goddammit. That's literally a quote I have written in my notes. Because she's a goddamn honourable knight, goddammit.
I can believe it. if anything, like, she's not goddamn, is she, though? Because she's
God blessed.
God blessed, that's it. She's
a God blessed honourable knight, God bless. anyway, yeah. I didn't realise how powerful she was until I started reading notes and watching videos on Sunday. But there you go. That's what happens when you just think of cool characters from animes you watched and actually investigate them properly.
Yeah.
That is Saber or Altria Pendragon.
So she's just like uber good with swords, blessed by God, has Excalibur, the joint strongest sword there is, and gains magic from her master.
Yes. In this instance, it should be noted, I am definitely treating it as the first anime I watched of her in, and therefore her master is a tiny teenage boy.
Will her master have to be present at this battle?
No, they do not have to be. I mean, I'm saying that they would be, but they don't technically have to be present.
I'm just thinking, because you were saying that, obviously, if their master were to die, then they would start to get weaker and gradually fade out, and obviously would instantly, I assume,
yes,
stop getting the magic bonus that they get.
It would be sad. But equally, let's pretend that I'm a dude with a machine gun and I have a daughter, I don't know, 200 meters away from me, and you have a sword. Are you going to run and try go to kill my daughter knowing that I'm just going to shoot you down with a machine gun?
No.
Probably not.
But interestingly, you would mention a dude with a machine gun because that is what my character is going to be.
Actually, I love it. What you need to do is reverse those roles, and you literally have the exact scenario that's about to happen.
I'm just saying, like, obviously my character wouldn't want to kill a teenage boy, as he is a good guy. But that
good guys don't matter.
What do you mean?
Good or bad doesn't matter in this. If he's being attacked by someone who's, you know, and that they're a master. They're part of the attacking force. It counts.
I'm just saying. Well, does the master attack as well then?
They can do if they want to, but I mean, typically wouldn't.
No, well, that is sort of what I was thinking. So he wouldn't necessarily be like, look, this big person with a really powerful sword is attacking me. I'm going to go shoot that teenage boy.
Yeah, that'd be a bit dumb, wouldn't it?
Right. I'm just saying, however, if he were to somehow throughout this fight learn that it would be a way to weaken the enemy, then it might become a more tactically viable, certainly if he was losing and had little of a choice.
It might become a more
plausible
dishonorable option.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, boy, you got some good auctions for me. What is an auction?
It's where you sell things to the highest bidder.
No, that's an auction.
It's where you sell oxygen to the highest bidder.
That's where you sell orcs to the highest bidder.
Okay. My clue, last episode, was that it is somebody who has redefined the genre of games they are from. At least the games they were in redefined the genre, which I think is probably true. And I probably said something else a bit more personal about them, but I can't remember.
Got a big dick?
I imagine he's the sort of guy who does, but he wouldn't brag about it.
Okay.
But yeah, so he's a big... the other thing I said was he was a very big staple in the sort of Xbox 360 launch, that sort of era.
Oh, I know who it is now.
Yeah, you do. And the character I'm bringing is actually a fan-suggested character.
Oh,
but as soon as I saw it on Twitter, I was like, oh my god, yes. This person. And straight away put them on my list. And that person is Marcus Fenix from Gears of War.
Ow!
No, that was the cat from a dwarf.
Oh, man, I was trying to do a who impression, but it went really badly. Trying to do a who scream.
And what I thought was, obviously, I'm a very big Gears of War fan. Love the Gears of War games.
Mm.
So I could talk about this character for ages, if needs be. But so I didn't prattle on. What I've done is I've got their backstory from their sort of childhood and teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they win this time, I'll then do a bit more of their adult life in the next episode.
I mean, this sounds really stupid, but should you not do the adult life now because it's the most relevant and then go back even further later episodes?
Because is what I'm and I think most of the adult life is covered by the actual games.
Okay.
And it was sort of, I don't know, it was nice to give a bit of extra, I felt.
Fair enough.
And chronology is nice. Obviously, you know, if he doesn't win this fight, then it won't matter. But I just thought that would be an interesting way that we could not keep recovering the same thing each episode. And I've got a little bit about his adult life. So, Marcus Fenix, as far as the Gears of War games are concerned, is the leader of Delta Squad in the war between the humans and the Locust. He is well known for his battle prowess and is a highly regarded soldier even before the game start, due to his heroics at the Battle of Asphodel Fields, which was the turning point in the war between the COG and the UIR in the Pendulum Wars, which was the last human war before the Locust emerged.
And a really cool sounding name.
Well, the Pendulum Wars.
Yeah.
Basically, like I say, all this sort of stuff I'm going to cover is primarily from before the games, although I can do a quick run of some of the stuff he's done in the games as well. And the stuff from before the games and in between 2 and 3, where there is the big time skip, can all be covered in the Extended Universe books, which are by Karen Travis. The first one of which is does center on the Battle of Asphodel Fields in the Pendulum Wars. And all of those books are very good if you are interested in Gears of War. And I have all of them, they're great. However, the tutorial mission for the first Gears of War game was to break Marcus out of the Slab, which was a maximum security prison for dangerous criminals. And he was incarcerated there for abandoning the battlefield in order to save his father. In order to save his father at the Battle of Ephyra, which I believe they did as like a flashback mission on one of the games. I'm pretty sure it was Gears of War 3. But that the scene where he went to his father's mansion to try and rescue him.
I remember the mission.
Yeah.
I remember killing a lot of grubs on steps.
And it's all like dream sequency, isn't it? So every time you kill one, they kind of like fade away into dust and then it all goes like red and explodes and it's cool. And then you wake up on the boat, so it must have been Gears of War 3. Not only did him abandoning the battle lead to the Locust gaining a massive advantage in the war, but he was also unable to save his father, which was, you know, bad in all accounts. So it was like, not only did you abandon your post, you didn't even achieve what you were trying to do. You just expended resources and human lives, and all in all, it was terrible. So due to this, he was tried for dereliction of duty, and he was sentenced to 40 years in the Slab.
It's a long time.
It is. But the first Gears of War game is set 4 years into his sentence. So he was only in prison for 4 years before the prison got overrun by Locusts. And he had to be rescued. Although they were actually didn't go and rescue him because the prison had been overrun. They were going to go get him anyway because he was a brilliant soldier and they needed him. Because he was released in order to take part in the highly dangerous and arguably suicidal light mass bomb mission, which is what the story of the first game is. Where essentially they had to take this new bomb called the light mass bomb and find a locust hive underground, plant the bomb in it and destroy it. And that's what the first game focused around. It was very interesting. It was during not long into that mission that the big bad of the first game, General Rahm, killed the guy who was leading Delta Squad at the time, who was Lieutenant Kim. And then it was after that Marcus became the leader of Delta Squad, and that is what he was in the other games too. He is a fairly quiet character in that he only sort of talks when necessary, and it's mostly just to shout orders or battle tactics. He's very sort of private. He seldomly talks about his personal life or his emotions. This is arguably due to his upbringing, where he was portrayed as quite a shy child who just always wanted to know where his mum was and sort of spend time with her. And he had quite a strained relationship with his father, as his father was one of the lead COG scientists. The COG is the Coalition of Ordered Governments, by the way, that's what it stands for. And because his father was sort of a lead scientist for them, he was often away on deployment and helping with various battles and stuff. He was also homeschooled until the age of 9, where he received a top education at home, but because he had become a loner and he was only really interacting with his mum, at the age of 9 he was sent to a regular school and forced to mix with other children. Here he was instantly bullied because he came from a wealthy background, and the only person who stood up for him was Carlos Santiago. And due to standing up for him, Carlos was then attacked by the kids at the school, but Marcus beat them up, and then the two were sort of left alone and became really good friends, united through that. And it is through that friendship that Marcus also became friends with Carlos' brother Dom, who is one of the other main characters in this series of games. 3 years after this, one day when he was at Santiago's house, Marcus received a phone call informing him that his mother had gone missing, and due to the now absent mother and the fact his father was still often deployed with the military, Marcus didn't really interact much with people other than the Santiago family. And then 5 years after his mother's disappearance, Marcus and Carlos both enlisted into the COG as gear soldiers. Marcus was very much attracted to the idea of becoming a soldier because he liked the idea of camaraderie and sort of all looking out for each other, and that kind of bond you get, like the soldiers in arms thing, which kind of shows, despite his sort of gruff, solitary exterior, he's actually a very caring person. I suppose also shown from his actions as an adult, where he abandoned a battlefield to try and save his father, even though they had had a somewhat rocky relationship, he still went, "I care about my dad more than I do orders." So he's a very good person to have as a friend, is Marcus.
But not necessarily as a soldier. I mean, yes, but equally... and orders.
Yeah, potentially he puts his own personal interest in over the greater good in a couple of instances, but he is still a brilliant soldier on the whole. He's very skilled at what he does. I thought for the purpose of this, although other guns are available in the Gears of War universe, he would just come in with a standard loadout.
That makes sense.
So his weaponry would be the Lancer Assault Rifle. Now, the exact stats for this vary depending on game. So I understand that realistically we probably aren't going to count bullets and stuff.
No, that's just silly.
But I just thought I'd point out, in Gears of War 1, 3 and Judgment, it has a magazine size of 60. However, in Gears of War 2 and 4, it only has a magazine of 50.
Why they changed that? Who knows?
I don't know. Also, in Gears of War 1, you have the max ammo of 660. In Gears of War 2 and 4, you have a max ammo of 550. And in Gears of War 3 in Judgment, it was 420.
No, I mean, it's 1 and 2, they're both saying 11 clips.
Okay. Yeah, 1 in the gun, 10 standard. Same with 4, actually.
But not 3.
No, not 3 or Judgment.
Silly games.
And then obviously, you know, the thing that makes the Lancer famous amongst gaming is that instead of a standard knife bayonet, as you would expect a rifle to have, it has a chainsaw bayonet for gorily messing up your opponents.
Hooray!
Yay! So, you know, it's worth noting that if you ever run out, all hope is not lost. If you can get close to your opponent, you can still hack them to death.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly standard assault rifle, but it has a chainsaw bayonet, which is fun and exciting. He then has the Nasher shotgun, which is like his CQC weapon.
His what? Oh, close.
Close quarters combat.
Yes.
At close range, you don't really need to aim, just a hit, sort of a hit or insta-kill most things, because, you know, shotguns. Video game shotgun. But at long range, it can still be relatively dangerous. But it can hold 8 shells at a time before it needs to be reloaded, and you have 39 max ammo, and that's been consistent across all Gears of War games.
39? Why not 40?
I don't know. that's how it is. Oops.
The last clip only holds 1 bullet. Less. Damn it.
Yeah, it only holds 7 bullets. And there is the snub pistol. It has a clip of 12. You know, it's just sort of a standard pistol. It's quite accurate, but not as powerful as the other weapons. Again, this one, the clip size has been consistent, but the ammo has changed. It has a max ammo of 96 bullets in Gears of War 1, 3, and Judgment, and 134 bullets in Gears of War 2 and 4. It's worth noting it's a semi-automatic pistol, which means it can fire as quick as you can pull the trigger. And then the last thing he will come equipped with is he will have 2 bolo grenades on him. The way bolo grenades work is they're like an explosive ball on the end of a chain, and you kind of like swing the chain to get a good like momentum to your throw, and then just sort of release and it will fly, which allows you to throw it further than just throwing a grenade. The explosive part of it has also got spikes on it, meaning you can stick it into a person, which usually results in you both dying because you're too close to them when the grenade goes off.
Hooray!
But also, if you were to throw it and it were to hit a person, it would stick into them. Or you can stick it into walls in order to set up like a proximity trap. So then when an opponent got too close to it, it would then detonate. So they're quite versatile as grenades go. And then that is basically the Marcus Fenix rundown.
What about the Walker?
Well, that will come next time. Unless he dies. How do you feel this fight will go? Do you have a person in mind you think will win?
I mean, I don't know. It depends. It always depends.
What does it always depend on?
On the terrain, as defined by...
The Die of Death! That today's fight is taking place on a sinking ship.
On a sinking ship. Yes, we're so good. Why do we pick these picks? I love it. Okay. How big is this ship?
I'm thinking like cruise liner.
Yeah, okay, agreed. It's got to be, it can't be like a little boat or, you know, it's definitely bigger than a lifeboat. It's proper, like a cruise ship. Like a Disney cruise ship.
Specifically a Disney one.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they look really cool. How fast is it sinking? Where is it sinking?
What do you mean, where is it sinking?
Well, I mean, obviously in the sea, but I mean, what part of the sea? Is it sinking in the Med? Is it sinking in the North Sea? Is it sinking in the Atlantic Ocean?
Like a cold but not icy sea.
So the North Sea.
Sure.
How far apart are people on this sinking? Oh yeah, we didn't decide how quickly it was sinking. How quickly is it sinking? I can imagine a cruise ship would take at least an hour to sink, but I don't know. I'm not an expert in sinking cruise ships.
Well, I was going to say, I'm thinking like end of disaster movie style sinking. So it was very cinematic. Like, you know, how long did it take the Titanic to sink in that film? Like a quarter of an hour?
Well, yeah, but in real life, it took several hours.
Sure, but we don't have several hours to record this fight.
No, we don't. 2 hours later, ding, 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 ding. Marcus Fenix found more ammo.
Because otherwise, you might as well just be like, well, they're just on a ship, aren't they? They're just on the deck of a ship.
Okay, yeah. So it's really badly sinking. Hollywood sinking ship.
If you want. Have you seen Spider-Man Homecoming?
I haven't, actually.
I was going to say, it could be like, there's a scene in that where a boat sinks because it gets literally split down the middle. Yeah. And it sort of like peels in half for like 2.
Okay. Sinking ship. It's going to sink in 5 minutes or less. Let's go with Spider-Man Homecoming. It's been split in 2. Are people on opposite sides of the sinking ship?
Yes.
As default, because Sabre comes with Master. I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. It's not important. he, for the sake of argument, he's a generic guest on board the boat because it's the same, really.
That's it. Because obviously, on a Disney cruise, you get like, what, 10,000 people on one of those?
Yeah.
He says that's the number out of his ass.
Yeah, that is absolutely out of your ass. But I mean, it's probably more like 3,000, I guess. But, okay, capacities are between, here we go, between 2,500 and 4,000.
Okay. So let's go for a big one. Let's say there's 4,000 people.
4,000. Okay, so this can be the Disney Dream.
Okay.
It weighs 129,690 tons.
Sounds like almost as much as me after a kebab.
Its godmother is Jennifer Hudson. I don't know what that means.
That's probably who launched it.
Yeah, but why are they a godmother of a ship? That doesn't make sense. You don't give birth to ships.
No, your godmother doesn't give birth to you.
Okay, but to be fair, you do give a wide berth to ships if you're paddling because you don't want to be hit by that.
I stand by godmothers don't give birth to you anyway.
Yeah, but I liked my wide berth joke.
It was a good joke. It was just poorly set up.
Oh, sounds like my life.
Well, you had a good time, but it was poorly set up.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Right, okay.
Okay, so anyway, so there's 4,000 people on this.
Yeah.
So what about, you know, if Sable Pendragon lady.
Saber.
Saber Pendragon.
Yep.
Her and her master were two of the guests, and Marcus just happened to be on it as a guest, because why not? He seems like the sort of man they could do with a Disney cruise, right?
Yeah, take the vacations, killed a bunch of locusts.
Yeah.
And then he's got his guns with him, because why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, he always expects the worst.
Yeah, and the worst just happened to happen. When the ship started sinking, and then someone came along, tried to kill him. Probably
that's it. What it was, basically, like somebody was upset. There was an anti-Disney terrorist.
Are we also passengers on this boat? Because you know, in the canon, that these guys are defending us from our bullets.
Yeah.
Given that both characters died last time.
Oh God. Maybe we are.
It only makes sense, really, if we're both on this boat recruiting our new people. And then we're like, oh, shit, they're there.
What it is we were on this boat to get over our, like, you know, recent... We've just got out of hospital, haven't we? So,
yeah.
And we were like, you know what, cheer us up, Disney cruise. Disney cruise. But yeah, then anti-Disney terrorist blows up the ship and it starts to break apart.
Misunderstanding, and they think that it's each other.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, and quickly we get to a lifeboat.
Oh. So we're safe.
Yeah. I feel like we're safe. Or maybe there's only one space left in the lifeboat.
Oh, yes, yes.
And they have to fight to get us in.
Yes, that is...
Which would be really sad, because it means one of us will die at the end, which will ultimately end the podcast somehow.
No, we'll be fine, because afterwards it will turn out there's another lifeboat, but they won't know that, because they're in the middle of a brawl.
Or, it's okay, Wade, because at the end of this, there'll be room for both of us on that door.
There will. We're not selfish, Rose. Right, okay. Lifeboats. We're scrambling towards the lifeboat as the ship is cleaved in two by anti-Disney terrorists. Sounds so amazing. And the boat is...
It's like, I wonder who the anti-Disney terrorist was. And there's just like one guy in the middle of the crew with a massive Warner Brothers t-shirt.
That makes Star Wars great again. He's holding a lightsaber. He cut it out from a lightsaber. Yes. I love it. That's the canon.
X-Men don't want to be in the MCU.
Oh dear. He falls into the drink and drowns because he's a loser. He's not a loser because of his beliefs, by the way. He's a loser because he just cut a boat in half and he's going to kill up to 4,000 innocent people.
Many screaming and terrified civilians in amongst this fight.
Well, I mean, you say that, but, you know, the deck could be pretty empty if it's nighttime.
I was going to say it'd be empty if everybody's trying to get to the boat.
Oh dear. Right, okay. Shall we pretend that they begin in the adjacent cabins that have now been split apart so they come out of the rooms? Okay. Yeah.
So just to remind me, there's was it Altaria?
Artoria. Because Artoria. I can't words, yeah.
Does Artoria have any sort of ranged attacks?
I mean, only if she wants to go OP, which she normally wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, essentially no.
Okay. there is a chasm between them of the boat splitting, yeah?
There is, absolutely there
so,
is.
So, I mean, Marcus is just going to pull out his lancer and start shooting, because why wouldn't he?
Absolutely, why wouldn't he? Yeah,
but obviously, you know, him being the master of cover shooters, he'll like have his back to the door of the cabin, and he'll like stick the gun right, pull up a few shots.
Yes,
go back.
Yes, he will.
Well, he needs cover. That's his deal, right? I mean, essentially, he is. Yes, he's armored, but he is still human. Like he will die relatively easily.
Yeah. Okay. So he pulls around. He sees the person, they lock eyes, and they know that it is time to finish each other off before the boat sinks, and we both die, and they both die. Starts ratting off some rounds. Ratting off some, it's a new term I came up with. It might exist, I don't know. Saber, she's, as described, got good reflexes and instincts, allowing her to dodge most incoming projectiles. I mean, I'm not going to say it would be perfect. Absolutely, if there were hundreds of thousands of incoming projectiles, you wouldn't be able to start them.
It's not hundreds of thousands.
No.
Wait. It only has a clip of... We'll go with a bigger one, like, be generous, but it's only got a clip of 60. So at most, there are 60, but they probably wouldn't fire a whole clip because it'd do, like, a burst so he can maintain accuracy.
Yeah. My point was that she's definitely not immune to bullets and projectiles, but she's very good at evading them in you know, well observable scenarios. So starts running out of the way, zigzag across the corridor in order to gain enough momentum to jump onto the other part of the boat because she only has an invisible sword, and what else is she gonna do?
She's not gonna be one of these people who pulls like the crap, like they can block bullets with their sword, right?
No, I don't believe that it is described that she can block them with her sword, only that she has good instincts for evading them.
Sure. I mean, I know physically you could, but you would obviously have to have crazy reflexes.
You would. And a good sword.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, she does have a good sword.
So, seeing that... Well, obviously, you know, firstly, he's going to try and shoot her while she's jumping, because she can't evade and jump at the same time, right?
I mean, it makes reasonable sense that you would be able to evade and jump at the same time, yeah.
So, that would be, like, his prime opportunity to take another burst of shots. I mean, I understand that he's not going to be as accurate as normal, because he is standing on a moving surface. And that's the other thing. Your jump's going to be quite difficult, because as you're jumping, the gap is only getting bigger.
Yeah, but, yeah. Be fine, probably.
But yeah, so do you think, you know, I'd like to think he'd get at least like a glancing wound. Maybe not like a good hit, but maybe like an arm or a leg hit.
I have no doubt that some of the bullets would make contact.
So how susceptible to bullets is she? She's a weird question.
It's a weird question. She can use a, you know, manner to defend herself, allowing her to take blows and things. But so I think they'll definitely hit, and it would cause her the kind of pain that it does through any hit. But I don't think it would cause any major damage, but it would deplete an imaginary mana pool.
Okay.
Of some mana.
She'd be like, "Grr, that stings."
Yeah, it'd be like, sure, she'd be like, ah, but you know, depending, it's still Mark's feelings, she'd be like, what the hell, what a dame.
Okay, so then knowing that she's now on his side and going, well,
yes.
Like she doesn't visibly look to be armed.
Yeah, she looks like she's holding her hands in a weird posture.
So he'd think, well, the best thing for me to do now would be to swap to my shotgun, get the Nasher out, because then when she gets close, bam, and you know, heavy damage.
He wouldn't go for chainsword?
No, I don't think so. It very much sort of try, at least like while she get a couple of shotgun shots off at sort of close but not point blank range. Because especially if he's in a door, like behind a doorway, as she gets to the doorway, if he can sort of swing, bang.
So he's in the doorway of the room.
Yeah, so he's kind of like inside the cabin, looking like shooting out into the corridor where she was.
Yeah, okay.
He's now like, oh, she's almost here. Swap to my shotgun and wait until she's like in the door, like coming through the door to him, and then pow.
So old Saber lands, and I guess at this point Marcus is, you know, she's been clipped with some bullets or hit with some bullets. Marcus has retreated behind the door to swap guns or whatever he's doing. She's gonna make a
I think as well before, like, because she'd be slowed down by being shot slightly, he'd probably reload the Lancer before swapping guns. I think he'd have time to do both.
Yeah, I agree. He'd have time. I think she'd make use of her good speed and go for a, you know, like a anime style charge across the doorway to then, you know, attack inwards if applicable, or then run through the door with her invisible sword.
Okay.
So darts past the door quite quickly.
So as she was darting across the door, that's probably when he'd try and sort of take the shot with his shotgun.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how anime fast?
I think it's knowing, having played Gizzle, I mean, I'm not very good with a shotgun at Gizzle War.
But I've played it online enough to know how...
Well, it isn't easy to track fast with it. I mean, I appreciate that that's taken applying game physics to a person. But, you know, we're just applying whatever we want to whatever.
Yeah. But the point is, I don't, at that range, you wouldn't need to necessarily track. It would be, as she went across the doorway, he'd just fire a shot through.
Just fire through. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. We just need to be ready to go.
Yeah, it's a case of, you know, does she move quicker than he could react?
I don't think it would be a clear hit, but there probably would be some hit.
Yeah, again, maybe just like, you know, a bullet would graze her back or something, part of the shell.
Another glow of matter.
So, I mean, I don't think anything, like, a bullet wouldn't penetrate. It would be the sort of thing, to even to a normal human, it would hurt, but it wouldn't do any damage.
Right. So now there's a dude with a shotgun on the other side of a door, and a woman who now knows there's a dude with a shotgun.
Well, this is the thing. Is she going to keep moving as she goes across the door, or is she very much going to stop on the other side of the door?
I was imagining dash past the door, to, you know, because if the door swung out, was my imagining. Then to see if he was behind the door and then go for attack. But if not, then immediately dart in.
Okay, because I think, especially if she was trying to dart in, he'd try and take another shot.
Yeah.
But then, like, I don't know, do you think she'd get in with the sword, or do you think she'd knock his gun out of the way as he tried to do that? Or
What's the reload time? I know he hasn't got to officially reload, but there's a cocking time between the shots. What's the time scale on that?
I don't know, maybe half a second.
So given that it was one past the door, quickly in, it's tight, but I think there might be a gun knocked out of her hand.
Okay.
And a shot into the roof.
Sure. Do you mean not knocked out of his hand completely, or just like pushed up?
How good is Marcus Venus's grip?
I mean, I don't know, I imagine it's fairly good.
Is it good enough to hold a gun that's been uppercut essentially by a sword?
I don't know, possibly not, I suppose, with the sword. Like, what is it? Is it a big sword?
It's not a broad sword. It's like a regular sword side. But she does wield it two-handedly, so I'd assume it's a bastard sword.
Maybe.
That would be my assumption.
He might still be able to hold it, like, on the trigger hand, but possibly not the other hand. The other hand, like, it would be...
Yeah, like the supporting hand.
Yeah, it would probably lose grip. But okay, what's Saber going to do now?
Strike up, strike down.
So just bring the sword down onto his chest.
Or shoulder or face or whatever bit happens to be in the way.
I mean, I suppose possibly I should have talked about this a bit in his build-up. But the standard COG soldier uniform does have chest armor.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe she, I don't know, would she go for that just because to try and like... That is where the vital bits are, or would she go for the arms because they are unarmed?
Saber tends to go for just big finishing blows consistently. You know, none of this, it wouldn't be none of this pottering around. Like, you know, have you watched Game of Thrones or read Game of Thrones?
No.
Probably. I don't think you've done either. Okay, well, there's a fight where this dude has a spear and he essentially just wears the fight down by chipping at the dude and making him feel weaker and stuff. That is not Saber at all. She is just into finish constantly. So she would absolutely be going for that. We wouldn't be going for an arm or a leg. It would be going for the chest.
Okay. So in which case, if she hits him then as a downward two-handed sword strike onto his chest, it would probably, mm-hmm. like, I think he'd be winded and maybe knocked to the floor, but not severely injured, because like I say, he's got armor.
Yeah, and there's no reason why she would have gone all out on her, well, as I say, although Shai said she goes for finishing strikes, there's no reason she would have, she tends to only use Excalibur's stupid power if necessary, and probably wouldn't do it in a sinking cruise ship because it is incredibly destructive and would probably blow up most of the cruise ship.
Okay.
Which would potentially kill up to 2,000 people because 2,000 are on the other side of the ship.
Sure. I mean, they're all potentially dead anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't want to potentially kill potentially dying people.
That's it. Okay, so I feel like that's the thing that's happened. So he's on the floor. She's standing over him. He's lost the grip on his shotgun properly. There's people running around screaming behind him, I imagine by now.
Or in the cabin?
No, like running around the corridor.
Oh, but aren't they in the cabin?
Yeah, but yeah. The corridor would still be behind her, wouldn't it?
Yes, you said behind him, I was confused.
Oh, apologies. Behind her. You know, I'm just trying to set a scene. I imagine by now there's probably a few things that are on fire, you know. Water is starting to come up the lower level. Do you think, you know, obviously the whole platform they're on is moving. I don't know if there'd be a sudden jolt or something. I kind of want the scenery to be a bit more interactive. Something going to fall over, interrupt the fight maybe.
Well, I mean, if it's sinking, it would probably just be gradually getting more and more inclined.
Mm-hmm.
Until it gets to vertical, which is always fun.
Surely when it gets to horizontal.
As in, the room starts horizontal and then it slowly goes to vertical.
Okay.
So the floor gets more and more angled. Until it becomes a wall.
Sure. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. It's leaning over a bit. So yeah, so if anything, he is... Not only is he now under her, because she's standing above him, but if she were to stab downwards onto him, she would also have the momentum of the ship moving towards her in her favour.
Okay, so the...
Because he's on the side that's going down.
Yeah.
So that's all kinds of bad for him.
It's not ideal, is it?
I think he would try and very quickly, knowing that he's not going to get a proper shotgun shot off. I'm just trying to think. Because your supporting hand would be your right hand, like his dominant hand.
No, supporting hand would be left hand if he was right-handed.
Oh, would it? My mind was the wrong way.
Yeah, because you pull with your... dominant hand, don't you?
Okay.
Before you trigger your main thing.
Oh man, in which case I don't know. I was going to say he'd probably just try and quickly whip his pistol out of his pocket, but maybe he won't then, because, God, I think that he'd probably then, in which case, try and have to re-grasp his shotgun, or drop his, or push his, he'd have to re-grasp his shotgun. That'd be his only way to try and like, make a shot off.
Okay. Saber's pretty honourable as a knight. So, although she's knocked him down, if he's not wielding a weapon and shooting at her while he's on the floor, I don't think she would take advantage of the, you know, of the opportunity, because it would be dishonorable to attack someone unarmed. But if he was to go for something, then it would be fair game.
Well, that's it. I don't think it would be dishonorable, because he is definitely going to re-grasp his shotgun. He's definitely trying to do that. She'd be able to see that's what he's doing. And at that range, if he fired a shot, she would, you know, quite plausibly lose her legs.
Yeah.
So I think she would try and make an attack.
I think she'd probably just, like, go for the gun. So, yeah, if he's on the floor and he's bringing up his gun.
Because he's still holding it with one hand, isn't he?
Yeah. I imagine she'd just, you know, probably not cut the gun, but bash the gun out of his hand.
Okay.
Doom. There we go, sailing across. It wouldn't go sailing because the ship's sinking. It would go scattering across the small room because we couldn't afford luxury rooms. So then she would be in a situation where he isn't going for something and it would be dishonourable to go for him.
Even in a fight to the death.
Well, I mean, it would be just... I guess if he didn't make any moves... Then she'd just have to be like, this is a fight to the death, it's over, and go for, you know, either ask for a yield.
Because I feel like that's the thing, isn't it? From where he, like, his next choice then, if he's lost his shotgun, his lancer would be on his back.
Yeah.
He wouldn't want to set off a grenade because there's still plenty of innocent people and it would definitely kill both of them. So realistically, he'd have to go for his pistol.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd probably go for that. She would either then cut off his arm before he could get it, or stab him in his stupid face and kill him, or...
Is he not one for, you know, would he not try and knock her over or something first?
I mean, I don't think so. Like, what? How could he realistically do it from where he is?
Okay. It was a four.
Yeah, I mean, I had considered it because your leg doesn't bend that way, especially as it's like he's lying on the floor. It's not even like a proper kick. It would just, I mean, it would be, but you know what I mean. It wouldn't have a full force.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like little kids fighting rather than a proper attack.
Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah, I think he'd have to go for his pistol. So then, again, you know, she'd sort of go, "Oh, look, he's getting a weapon." So she could either, before he could aim it and pull off a shot, she would be able to stab him through the face or throat or something that would instantly kill him. Or if, again, she wanted to just remove his weapon, realistically, you're probably not going to be able to hit a pistol out of someone's hand, but she could just cut his hand off.
I imagine she would go for more a stab through the chest. Neck or
yeah, again,
face is quite...
But again, his chest is armoured, and where you were sort of saying that she goes for finishing kills predominantly.
Yeah, I mean, like, the first blow... If, you know, I'm imagining a swinging sword, fair enough, the chest armor would probably be able to deflect it because it's not a piercing strike. But, I mean, if you were going, you know, it's like chainmail. Chainmail is an armor. It was good, but you can still get through with a sword. You know, you just had to take the right blow to do it.
Okay. And I suppose she does have a powerful magical sword.
She does have a powerful magical sword.
Okay. So, yeah, she could just stab him in the heart then.
Sure.
Either way, what I'm saying is I think he's dead now.
Oh, poor Marcus.
Yeah. That is a bit of a shame. I'm not happy about it. He's a character I really like, but I just think that is what has happened. He's just been outbeaten by anime speed. He couldn't get that. He couldn't get that shotgun shot.
Curse you, anime speed.
I mean, everyone in anime can run super fast, right?
Absolutely. It's one of the definitions of anime.
Also, let's be honest, it's quite true to Gears of War, because, like I say, it is a cover-based shooter. You know, he was doing okay at the beginning of the fight when he had the cover. Once you got him out of the cover, he died quickly. That is how Gears of War goes.
That is exactly how Gears of War works. You don't have cover, you don't live.
Yeah. So I think Marcus has died. I mean, do you want to describe her escaping the sinking ship just for the sake of doing it?
So she, you know, after stabbing him, she blesses Excalibur, runs out of the room. The incline is getting steeper, so has to run even faster to jump, you know, like does the proper anime kick off the surface to swish across to the other side, yelling like yeah, and probably lands, and if not, she can run across the water because of the blessing from the Lady of the Lake.
Yeah, it's true, sinking ship doesn't even bother her.
Well, I mean, it does still bother you. She can't stand on water and she'd have to constantly run. That would be really, really exhausting after a while.
Yeah, it would be less exhausting than swimming.
I'm not sure.
I'd find it less exhausting.
It would be far more exhausting than just, what do you call it when you're just keeping afloat? Yeah, treading water.
But she's only got to run to the nearest lifeboat.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Anyway, then she runs across and does another jump up, finds her master, who may or may not be me, and then finds me, who may or may not be her master, and then gets us onto a boat. Then she dematerializes her armor, because why on earth would you wear armor on a lifeboat?
But then you'd look over and you'd see in the next lifeboat over me there going, and shaking my fist at you.
Shaking your fist. And the Gears of War controller. I don't think the room did them any good. If it had been, you know, a more open affair, but with cover. Open with cover.
Yeah.
You know how the graveyard, right?
Yeah. That would have been.
If it had been the graveyard would have been Marcus Phoenix's dream. What is wet dream?
You know how you're in a good Gears of War environment, an open warehouse-like building with lots of sort of waist-high cover. You're like, oh, this is Gears of War,
and a couple of balconies, probably one balcony runway up high and then one path down low.
Yeah,
for teamwork skills.
Wow, what's that then? Guess I need to find out who I've got next. So, my first female character.
Whoa,
and. I know this isn't much of a clue for the audience. I'll think of one for them in a minute. But this is a character from a game that we used to play together a lot when we were sort of like in college and uni.
Okay.
So, and it's a series that you really like. And
okay.
At time of recording, the 2nd of April, it's very topical. This is a good clue, actually. At time of recording, a new game with this person in was announced last week.
Okay. I don't know what game that was. But.
Well, yeah. But the next installment, which I believe there hasn't been an installment in this series for, I think, like, 5 or 6 years, something like that.
Okay.
But the next one has just been announced. And she is a woman of immense magical power.
Okay.
With a desire to find treasure. Yeah, I think that's enough of a clue.
I'm trying to figure it is.
So we've been part of TTSS Productions, which is all the things you can find on TinkerTailorSoldierSponge.com. Go there and check out some of the other podcasts. Like, I really recommend, especially if you're living in the UK at the moment, that Unparliamentary Language has a lot of important things to talk about, which is the politics podcast, because there is a lot of crazy politics going on.
What? Crazy politics?
Crazy, crazy politics. I'd like to see some sort of I think that they should just do elections should be replaced with some sort of game show.
Big Break?
I was thinking more like, I don't know, something like wacky, like Funhouse. Like Pat Sharp should host it still. It'd be great. Get Pat Sharp and the Twins back. And like, I mean, maybe have some election, but top four, maybe candidates or something should all have take part in some sort of wacky thing. Or maybe like Takeshi's Castle. I don't know, some crazy game show. It'd be really cool.
Good old Takeshi's Castle.
Yeah. Or if you don't want to listen to another podcast and you're happy just listening to us, maybe just go there and like read the blogs. There's, you know, interesting things to be said on there. There's a lot of stuff going on that website. It's good.
It's good.
But yeah, but thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And feel free to go to our Twitter at podcastmmm and let us know how you think that fight would have gone. If there's anything that we could have done differently. Anything you particularly enjoyed or didn't enjoy, let us know. Or if you have any suggestions for future contestants, I've still got a fan suggestion one on my list that has not yet come up. Or if you have any fan suggestions for locations where you'd like the battle to take, please feel free to mention those. We have a fan suggestion of that on our list as well, which hasn't yet come up. But obviously, you know, we had a few fan suggestions that have made it into the show so far. So please get involved and share this around with your friends. Like some sort of delightful hug.
And your enemies.
Like some sort of undelightful hug.
I'll give you the worst of my hugs, enemy. Oh, no.
Yeah, to be fair, I'd be really upset with that. I'm going to hug you really badly. No, no, get it off.
Such a poor hug.
All right, we really need to sign this off now. Bye.
Bye. Oh, catch your layers.
Dearing me.
I'm terrible. So bad.